Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Domestic violence is such a huge issue in Australia. It's a lot larger than what you could ever imagine. And I'm just so thankful to be able to turn to a platform like When Dating Hurts, not only for myself, but for my 14-year-old daughter, where I can really educate her on that domestic dating violence specifically, especially from the ages of, she's 14, but up to 14 to 26 and older. I mean, it can happen at any age, really. So I'm very grateful for When Dating Hurts. It's really not just educated me, but it's also educating my 14-year-old. And I'm truly thankful. Thank you, Bill.
When Dating Hurts podcast continues to grow in popularity, the more who listen, the more who will know the realities of dating and domestic violence. In the meantime, the When Dating Hurts book, in paperback, ebook, and audiobook, is being purchased and read by concerned parents, teachers, victims and survivors, and of course, those who are currently dating. Education leads to empowerment. That way, if a potential abuser is targeting you or someone you care about, you will know how to detect it and how to break free and stay safe. Up next, another survivor story to illustrate how an innocent person can become manipulated and trapped in abusive relationships. The following story comes with trigger warnings due to both its content and their graphic descriptions. Beanie Chalfont, yes, her name is Beanie, brought her story to me in an email. I immediately knew she needed to tell her narrative to us. Reaching her 40s, she had never come close to intimate partner violence. But all that changed with one boyfriend. In the beginning, he seemed to bring everything she was missing. But before long, he was much more than she could handle. This story shows us once more that having no awareness of the warning signs of an unhealthy relationship makes it far too easy to become swallowed alive by an abusive predator. Here is Beanie's story, part one of two parts. Today on the When Dating Hurts podcast, we are speaking with Beanie, and she says that her mission is to, and I quote, guide women to embrace their own inner strength, to trust themselves, to take actionable steps, to recognize warning signs, and arm themselves with individualized techniques towards a life of freedom and happiness. Today, she's a domestic violence advocate, a supporter and coach and mentor for other women going through similar situations. So we're going to talk about those situations. So welcome, Beanie.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here and share my story with you.
Good. I'm very happy that you're here too. So Beanie, maybe give us kind of a few snapshots of growing up. Where, in what part of the country, mom and dad there? What's going on? What does that look like?
I grew up in San Diego with a single mom. I was the middle child, had an older sister and a younger brother, and my mom was very present, worked very hard for our family. I ended up marrying my high school sweetheart, and I was with him for 25 years, and I did everything very traditionally. I went to college, I became a first grade teacher, I got married, I had children, I was a stay-at-home mom. I kind of lived my entire life in a little bubble. My family lived all on the same street. We had family dinners on Sundays. We raised our kids together. Cousins were running around. My mother lived on the same street. And I didn't know anybody that dealt with domestic abuse. I didn't see it growing up. My ex-husband was a great father, and he was very present in my children's lives and in the family's lives. And so I would say I led a pretty sheltered life in that I just didn't know that people like what I ultimately ended up experiencing existed, which is just pure evil.
Well, that's a big statement. Let me go back just a bit. Now, in what you're telling me, you're married, you have children, and then you throw the words ex-husband in there, the word ex-husband in there. So that came to an end. Why did that come to an end?
You know, I think my ex-husband and I had buried ourselves in our children, in our family, in our friends. We were both very active in school, volunteering at school and on the board of the PTA and the baseball league. And we had a ton of friends. And I think that as my children got older, all that stuff was kind of stripped down a little bit, and we were kind of left staring at each other and not really happy, or at least I was not very happy. And I was a stay-at-home mom, and my kids had kind of gotten to that age where I felt like they didn't need me quite as much anymore. Little did I know that they definitely did need me, but I didn't know that at the time or didn't feel it. They kind of gravitated towards their dad. He would take them surfing all the time. And I just felt, I felt a little unneeded. And it was in my personality to feel, to need to be needed. It was then, insert the next decade of my life with somebody who needed me more than I could ever provide. I never saw it coming.
I think what can happen sometimes in marriages is that you get so caught up in raising the kids or having jobs or having all these responsibilities, and you become two people, almost like two people running a company. And then when the company evolves or people leave or whatever it is, there's just the two of you staring at each other like, hey, I used to know you. But that's about it. It's just like it was like a merger that the love has kind of dried up. Is that close?
Yeah, that definitely is what happened for me. We just, like I said, my kids got to like a middle school age where, obviously I was not on campus anymore, and they stopped playing baseball, and I still wasn't working. And quite honestly, I probably should have, at that point, I should have gotten a job and gotten out of the house. And what I ended up doing was being a little obsessive about losing weight. And that was when I ended up joining a gym. And that was where I met the man that ended up abusing me for a decade. He was an instructor at a gym. We developed a friendship, and, I knew him at the gym, and it slowly progressed, and I ended up hiring him as a personal trainer for a trip that I was going on, and I wanted to lose X amount of weight by the time I was leaving for that trip with my then husband. We became friends. We saw each other every day. I had one-on-ones with him all the time. If I wasn't doing a one-on-one with him, then I was taking his class and I was in the gym, and he was everything that my ex-husband was not in all the best and worst ways. So it was different. He helped me lose a good amount of weight. And so I started to feel like we were this great team, and I worked really well with him, and he really confided in me a lot of things about his life, and he became vulnerable, and he would cry in front of me, and we really developed this friendship. Ultimately, I believe that he was very calculated in everything that he was doing.
That even his vulnerability maybe was something that he saw was working on you, and so he just kind of plays that role.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
He was kind of mirroring you in a lot of ways. you know, seeing what you need and then acting that out and you're buying it.
Yeah, I bought everything hook, line, and sinker. And, you know, looking back on it now, it just makes me cringe a little bit about how naive I was about so many things.
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I could no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts. People who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get 6,000 cash, give us each 3,000, we give you this. Uh-huh. You go home and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done, and that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Your email to me said you related to my daughter's trusting and naive character about the dangers of the world. Of course, that really touched me, but it also mm-hmm. explains a whole heck of a lot when that was taking place with you. How long was this wonderful version of this guy? How long was that going on before the light came on in your head and you realized you were being played or being abused?
Longer than I'd like to admit. I think I realized there was something going on. He was different. He was different than anybody else I had met. And that all of the red flags were either appealing, exciting, because it was not something that I had ever mm-hmm. experienced with my ex-husband, or they were dismissed as, oh, he's just really passionate, or he's just so concerned. He loves you so much, and he doesn't want to see you hurt, and he needs to know where you are. So I was able to just kind of erase away all of the red flags with excuses of why he did what he did, and that he was just very different. He was very different than I had only been with one other man my whole, you know, I was 16 when I started dating my ex-husband, and, you know, now mm-hmm. I'm almost 40, and that was the only relationship I had ever really had up until, you know, I had met him.
So when you talk about the red flags, you know, you kind of gave us a little bit of a glimpse. But I mean, is this one of these texting everywhere you go, call you every time, where are you now? I mean, what kind of red flags can you tell our listeners?
Yeah, the red flags were, they were apparent pretty early on. He wanted constant communication with me. He wanted to know where I was. He wanted me to text him back with, you know, within a certain amount of time. I definitely needed to pick up the phone if he ever called. He, you know, the other red flags was that he started to humiliate me in front of other people at the gym.
What's he saying?
He I was mean, very he, hard. Yes.
Making fun of you or?
He's yelling at me. Not making fun of, but. Not making fun of, but more like he wanted to make sure that I was, he had a very, very high standard for me. And he was teaching me how to box. It was a boxing gym. And so I had never, I was middle-aged and I didn't know how to box. I was just doing it to, you know, to lose weight. And so, yeah, he would say things like, okay, you know, you can do better than that. And what are you, dumb? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, he would degrade me in front of other people. And that was always chalked up to, you know, oh, he saw my potential and he really just wanted me to live up to that potential. And so, you know, in my naive way, I was like, well, I want to be the best. I want to do really well. I want to live up to my potential. So I'm going to work harder. I'm going to do better. And we had already kind of been a team in me losing weight. And so I knew that what he told me to do worked. And so I was like, okay, well, I trust him because he's already helped me to do this. So I'm just going to.
Right. Look at all the progress.
Right. Right.
It reminds me a lot of a drill sergeant. You know, drill sergeants making fun of people, kind of, and urging them, and come on, get over that wall. Let's go. You can run faster than that. Come on, come on, come on. Tie those shoes. You know, what are you crying? You know, what are you going to cry now? You're going to cry. Can't you do it?
Yeah, and I, you know, I'll be honest.
It kind of becomes the relationship.
Yeah, I'll be honest. My personality, I don't mind you being tough on me to bring out more and better. Some people don't like that, and I understand and respect that as well. But for me, it made me work harder, and I reacted to that and just kind of put my head down and worked harder. And so that was definitely to my detriment.
His styling when he's doing that, did that carry over when you two left the gym? Were you getting that at home kind of, or in the car?
Yeah. That would happen outside of the gym, but it was such a push and pull. It was such a, like, I'm going to give you so much. Cause on the other end of that, he was incredibly verbal in his lifting me up. I've never met anybody who worked as hard as you. You are the hardest working woman I've ever trained, and nobody is like you. And yeah, oh my gosh, I can't believe how strong you are. And, you know, so he knew exactly what he was doing. He, you know, he would build me up 5 times and knock me down 7.
Well, besides giving you a steady diet of those kinds of comments and doing that, what else is he up to? We've already got him keeping tabs on you to a point where it's painful.
Yeah.
What else are you experiencing? Is he trying to isolate you from any friends or anybody like that?
Yeah,
You getting that too? Isolation?
Definitely there was isolation pretty early on. He would isolate me from my family as I was losing weight. And I was losing weight in not a very healthy way. I was working out multiple times a day. I was wearing sauna suits. I was doing all sorts of like fighter type weight loss things. And my family kind of started to question and, hey, you know, maybe it's a little too much. And, you know, when I would tell him about what my family was saying, he was like, oh, they're just jealous and don't listen to them. And so I was isolated from my family pretty quickly. And then from my friends as well, it got to a point where, you know, it just was easier to not go out with my friends because his contact with me when I was out with them was so great and so stressful. And if I didn't answer, and it just got to a point where I was like, I'll just stay home.
And these are your women friends at this time, right?
These are my women friends. Correct. Yep. These are my girlfriends. Yep.
Possessiveness is over the top, even with them. So like you say,
yes,
at some point you just surrender and say, you know what? I just don't want to hear it. So I won't do it. And then eventually, most of the time, people's friends get the point and they stop calling. It's like, she's not going anyway.
Yep.
We're not going to be seeing Beanie tonight. Yep. So let her go. If she wants to hang out with that guy, then...
Yeah, and quite honestly, you know, when I was with my friends, I was always thinking about him. And it was, you know, it was not just him with me. At this point, I was hooked. I was already in the trauma bond, and I was already like, where is he? What's he doing? Who's he with? Because quite honestly, I never really trusted him. I tried to trust him, but I never trusted him.
So you figured he was two-timing you while you were trying to have a life outside?
Yeah, absolutely, I did. Yep. And so I naively thought, well, I'll just be around him as much as I possibly can to avoid the idea of him stepping out on me if I'm near him.
Yeah, can't do that.
He won't be able to do that, which is, you know, looking back on that, it sounds absurd coming out of my mouth.
Well, we all have a high IQ when it's too late, that's for sure.
Right, right. But he was also, you know, he was love bombing me. He was, you know, oh, I'm going to take you on a trip. And
did he take you on a trip?
He would take me on trip. Yeah, we basically did the same trip.
Oh, what's that?
He was not a very adventurous kind of guy. So we went to Cabo and we went to Las Vegas. And those were basically the only trips we really ever took. He's, like I said, he's not an adventurous guy. Probably also worth mentioning that he is a high-level athlete. He played football in college. He played football in the Arena League. He is a black belt in jiu-jitsu, a world champion black belt in jiu-jitsu. He ran track in college. He boxed. He had a couple fights in boxing. He is a high-level athlete who prided himself on taking care of his body. And I'm going to put that in quotes, because although he was strong and in the gym and working out all the time, I would not say that he took care of his body with, you know, drinking and the drugs.
Oh, that was in it too, huh?
That was in it as well. Yep.
How far along are you in the relationship when you realize he's using drugs?
I would say only a few months. And I had not ever used drugs. I had not used drugs up to that point. And I just feel like everything that he said to me was, I believed. And I believed that the life that I had led was such a small, you know, bubble, and that I was the odd one in the fact that I didn't smoke weed, I didn't do cocaine, I drank with my friends and stuff on weekends or whatever, but, you know, drugs were not really a part of my life while I was married. I just trusted him. I ended up doing drugs with him periodically, which I am not proud about. Don't like that I did that, but add that to the list of the things that I did that were uncharacteristic about myself.
I think what happens from talking with a lot of different people is that even though you had a predisposition to feeling some of these things weren't right or they were wrong, shouldn't do that. You kind of grew up with that. I mean, here you are making your way through your 30s and you've been a good girl, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then this guy comes along and you make allowances. For one thing, you want the relationship, but also, you know, it's kind of a little bit naughty. But on the other hand, it's kind of got some drama involved. So, okay. I mean, I did this or I did that. I didn't die from it. I'm not an addict. So maybe you make more allowances and you're heading down this path, and you don't go to the end of the path in the beginning. You just start down the path, and this guy's leading the way. So it's all part of this guy or this mystique that you're buying into, that you feel like you have to kind of come along. And if he's doing it, you're doing it. I mean, you know, he may have been chiding you if you didn't do it. Like, yeah, come on. What's the matter with you? Just, I'm not asking you to do that much. Just do this. Come on, get with it.
Yeah, it definitely got to that point, especially, you know, several years in, where I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to. And then I knew that if I didn't, that it would cause a fight.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And so I was always trying to keep the peace at the expense of my own character.
Compromising yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a, end quote, fight, end quote, what does that look like? Is this just an argument that goes into the evening and we sleep in separate places? Or is this like we're starting to get physical?
No, it was physical.
Oh, really?
It was physical pretty early on. He spit in my face, I think, probably the very first time. I believe that it was him spitting at me. But it escalated quickly. There was one time where what would happen was, you know, he would flip out. He would throw these tantrums, these adult style tantrums, an adult tantrum that looked like, you know, a 3-year-old. I would end up leaving the house because I was afraid of him, because although he hadn't been physical yet, I was afraid that he would become physical. And so I would leave the house. And when I left, he would start to threaten me. And he would threaten, you know, if you don't come back, or when you do come back, I'm going to XYZ. It could have been, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to knee you in the stomach. I'm going to punch you in the jaw. He was very descriptive about what he was going to do to me when I came back. And so oftentimes I would end up sleeping in my car on the side of the road in a random neighborhood because I was afraid to come home. And I remember one time I decided, you know what, I'm coming home. I'm not going to let this guy do this to me anymore. He locked me out of the front door of the house. You know, we had like one of those locks that you couldn't come in from the outside in. And so I went to the back door and he was laying in wait. He was like hiding behind the door so that when I walked in, I didn't know he was behind me. And he came up behind me and choked me and kneed me in the stomach. And like I said, this is a high level athlete. This is not somebody that I'm going to fight off. As strong as I was, and I was strong, there was no way that I was going to fight him off. And so, yes, the answer to that question is that our fights became very physical and I knew better not to fight back. Most of the time, especially for the first several years, I would just look at him. I tried to make eye contact with him while we were fighting or while he was attacking me or whatever it was he was doing in hopes that he would snap back into like, oh, my gosh, what am I doing?
Sure, of course.
Because at that point, I thought, oh, he still, you know, he loved me. I thought he loved me. And so I thought if I made that eye contact with him that he would, you know, come to and realize, oh, my gosh, I'm hurting somebody I love. Many years later, I come to accept the fact that he didn't love me. He doesn't know how to love.
You served a purpose. That was all.
Yeah, it was not love. Yeah.
After you've had one of those go-rounds with him, physical go-round, where you've been kneed in the stomach and partially strangulated and all those things, but immediately after and then for the next couple hours, what are you thinking? What's going through your mind? I mean, you got to be projecting, I just want peace, or I want out of here, or this is my life now. I mean, what are you thinking?
Honestly, all of those things. Part of what I thought often was, this is what I chose. I'm going to make this work.
That's what you signed up for.
Yes, this is what I signed up for. I'm going to make this work. I'm just going to continue to model the behavior that I want. And he's going to see how this works.
This concludes Beanie's story, part one of two parts. Be looking for part two on the When Dating Hurts podcast. Thank you for listening to the When Dating Hurts podcast. We have been steadily moving up in podcast review rankings based on downloads in the relationships category. That means more and more listeners are getting the kind of advice that can improve lives for victims, survivors, and their families. If you feel we need to hear your story, do not hesitate to email me at BillMitchell@WhenDatingHurts.com. That's BillMitchell@WhenDatingHurts.com. Hi, it's Bill Mitchell. I'm proud to say the When Dating Hurts podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. To learn more about Evergreen Podcasts or to check out other shows on the Evergreen Network, just visit evergreenpodcasts.com.